Blog Talk Radio.
Naked Shamanism. Welcome to With Insights Radio. I'm your host, Iggy Garcia. I will take you on a journey across the universe through shamanism, metaphysical, and holistic. So sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Welcome to withinsightsradio.com to Iggy Garcia Live, episode 36. The Old Woman in the Window is our episode today. I want to welcome everybody to the show. I'm sorry I'm late. I ran into some snags and some things I had to take care of. So let's get started. I want to say hello to everybody who's tuning in today. Thank you for joining us here on With Insights. We try to bring you the best quality shows possible. And hopefully, you know, if you want to call in and talk to me a little bit, the call-in number is 646-595-3440. Again, that's 646-595-3440 for those of you who want to call into the show. So I just want to see how you guys are doing. It's been a nice, fast, quick November. Now we're cruising through December. It's already the 11th. I celebrated my birthday. And good evening, Beck. How are you? Good to see you. John, good to see you. Yolanda, good to see you. Cash, good to see you. Sierra, good to see you. And, you know, thanks for joining in. And Marixa, good to see you too. And, yeah, we're on December 11th. I had a birthday here on the 8th, and it's pretty exciting, pretty cool to celebrate my 51st birthday. So I'm 15, if you turn the numbers around. I act like that sometimes. But, yeah, it's exciting to be progressing through life and coming out of the 5-0. I remember in 5-0, I was kind of, I was a little bit nervous being 50, and it was kind of strange. It was kind of a new experience for me. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't feel it so much in the other ages when I was starting to turn 30 and 40. It wasn't so crazy. Marixa, hola, ¿cómo estás? Buenas noches. But I'm saying hi to my cousin there, my aunt. I'm not sure which one's listening, but one of them is. But, you know, it's been an interesting ride. You know, you get to 50 and you're halfway to 100, if that's your goal. Tara, welcome to the show. Sherry, welcome to the show. You know, when you hit 50, it's kind of a weird number for some people. Some people freak out and panic. And I have to admit, you know, when I turned 50 last year, I didn't want to celebrate my birthday. It was nothing that I was really looking forward to. I didn't really know what I was getting into. And I said, no party for me. I want nothing to do with that. I don't want to celebrate. There's nothing to celebrate. I can't believe that I've gotten to 50. I remember when I was just 10, you know, I remember doing things when I was 10 and all of a sudden I'm 50, but you know, I just turned 51 a few days ago. And I tell you, that experience in itself is, you know, a little bit more liberating now that I got 50 under my belt, you know, and I'm kind of like, okay, I'm 50 now. And you know, that's just cool. And, you know, I got through the 50 age mark. Now I can progress through life and do what I need to do. But, you know, for a lot of people, it's hard. It's hard to move out of that state of being, you know, and thinking that you're not young anymore and thinking that you're not, that your life is coming to a certain place in a certain, I don't know, eldership type, you know, thing where you're kind of like, now you're the old wise person. You know, I'm not sure if there are a lot of immature 50-year-olds, I'm sure, but there's a place where you start to feel different about yourself. You start to, you know, have all those collections of memories and events and experiences that you kind of bring forward into your life forward, and people look at you much differently. I'm kind of fortunate that, you know, people say I don't look 50, that I look a little bit younger than 50, so I kind of get away with that. But there are other people who you know, who are a lot much younger than me, and they look much older. Life has its way of taking toll on certain people and the feelings, the emotions, and where they're at. I had my class reunion just this past year. You know, it was our 30-year class reunion, 30 years out of high school. That's crazy to even think about. And, you know, there were some people I didn't recognize. There were some people who just looked like, I don't know if they were in our class or not. It was just hard until they told me their names and what was going on. It was kind of a shock. I was like, oh my God, 50s, the ages have been bad for you, or they've been hard for you. I don't know, you know, whatever. But I had that feeling, and I felt really bad for them. But, you know, they had what they had to do, and they experienced what they had to experience. And, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, it's pretty exciting. So today I wanted to talk to you a little bit about something that I use a lot in my practice and a lot of things I use when I'm working with people. And it's called journaling. And this book right here is a good example of a journal that I just started, of many journals that I've started over the years. But this particular journal has to do something with a story that I titled the show, The Woman in the Window. Actually, The Old Woman in the Window. Okay, so before I get to that story about that woman, I wanted to share with you about this technique that I work in my practice called Gestalt Technique. The Gestalt Technique is being able to unlock the frozen pieces and parts of ourselves that we lock inside of ourselves. It gets stuck there by trauma or some type of event, something that puts us in that state of mind. So these traumas and these things that happen to us, you know, they're still part of us. And there's still things that work through us. There's things that, you know, yeah, you can say, Iggy, yeah, I've grown and I'm better and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you have. But there's parts of you that still control parts of you who we are today. For example, I'm just gonna say something really, it's gonna sound kind of off topic, it's gonna sound a little bit weird. For example, the guys who are necessarily our leadership right now who are being busted for, you know, the sexual harassment things that they're doing, you know, Al Franken, Trump, and everybody who's been doing, you know, like Al Franken touched the girl's flak jacket at her breast and stuff. Yeah, he claimed that was something he did a long time ago, and that's something that he did. But yeah, we're still judged by the things that we do. But my point is, we still judge ourselves by the things that we do sometimes and the things that have happened to us and the experiences that happened to us and put us in a certain place where we can't move from that energy, okay? What it is, sometimes it's known and sometimes it's unknown, and sometimes it is things that we just can't move from. But this is what the Gestalt techniques are, is where you actually sit with somebody and help bring up these pieces and parts of these people. But sometimes when you bring these pieces and parts up, the person who's present in the present moment can't communicate with these people. So basically what happens is the people in the pieces and parts of yourself who are frozen in a different time, an 18-year-old, a 20-year-old, can actually talk with this part that's traumatized, this part that's frozen. Okay? So this little piece and part is frozen in time inside of our cells, inside of our memory stick, you know, of our body, like a memory stick. All those things are stored in there until we erase it or we change it or rewrite it, okay? In the human aspect, it's a little bit different because with this memory stick, for example, it doesn't show emotion. It doesn't show a feeling. In our personal memory stick, we have memory. We have feeling. We have touch, feel. We have sense of smell and all the senses that go along with it. So when we rewrite our story, revisit the pieces and parts of us that have been affected by other in outside events or, you know, different people's interaction with us, you know, it causes us some issues. So there are some techniques that have been developed over the years and techniques that, you know, happen. But I personally have created a technique which is called the Sevenfold Legacy Open Chair Gestalt. Okay, the Open Chair Gestalt, what that is where we take chairs. It's very, very similar to Empty Chair Gestalt work. But this is sevenfold. This is seven generations deep. This is ancestral work. This is something that natives and indigenous people would do, which it would have a healing circle, except we use the chairs, okay? And for some people, that is very inviting. For other people, it's very difficult to do that work. But in this particular work that I'm going to actually be teaching a class this week here in Columbus, Ohio, this particular class, the Sevenfold Legacy Open Chair Gestalt Technique, where we actually become parts and we become different aspects of ourselves. We actually become another version of us. We become the father, the mother who put us in a certain state of mind. And we actually imagine and we pretend and we sit there and we guess what they were feeling in that moment. So it's hard to explain over the phone or over the show what exactly that looks like. But there's another way you can actually do this and revisit pieces and parts and write. In this particular journal that I've written, you know, it's called Letters to Younger Me, okay? And it's dated December 8, 2017, Ignacio Nacho Iggy Garcia, 1966 is when we were born. Now, these particular things, when we do this journal, this particular journaling that we're doing, what I tried to create was me revisiting me at a very younger age and to be able to interact with myself in this younger age. And what it was so fascinating, what was so fun about this interaction was I didn't know where it was going to go. So I'm going to read really quick what I wrote on the cover to myself, because one day I'm going to look back at this journal and I'm going to be interested to see what I wrote. I said, this book is a powerful, loving gift to all parts of us frozen in time. I hope we can see life a little differently after we finish writing it. I know we hold these experiences much differently than we do now. I'm going to let you know I will free write this journal, so please excuse the spelling, the sentence structure. Read with an open mind and an open heart. And basically, I just free write. I free write. In the beginning, it was really difficult to actually write it because I didn't know what I was going to say. But it wasn't really about what I was going to say. It was about what I remember the experience of me being a toddler, for example. There was a part where I just wrote, hey, I don't know what I'm thinking, blah, blah. And then eventually, I just start writing. And then the writing became a free flow writing, and then I began to just let it just take its own course. And then I met myself. I met myself at, 3 years old. And, the experience of a 51-year-old and meeting my 3-year-old was pretty profound, pretty powerful. It was almost like I had become my version's imaginary friend. And I'm thinking to myself, have I traveled in time? Have I moved into spaces unknown and known? Because when I started talking to myself, I actually saw, when I told myself, whatever you do, just tell everybody you just have an imaginary friend. And this imaginary friend was me, of course. So that way they wouldn't think that something was wrong with me or I was talking to myself or whatever. So there would be no misinterpretation of what was happening. So I found that pretty magical, pretty amazing. And, I started talking and I started writing, and I found myself writing almost 8 pages right off the bat. And I was just totally talking to myself. And then I started, the conversation by younger me. I'm sure to remember all the stories our mom and dad told. And that's where it started and it took off. And I had this idea as a grown-up person of what my life was like as a child, but it was completely different. It was completely much different than I thought. And so I began to write and I began to ask myself, hey, what are you doing? What's going on? And then, things started to come out. A little version, three-year-old version of me said, hey, it's kind of quiet around here. It's kind of lonely around here. There's nobody to play with and blah, blah, blah. And my dad's not around. My dad's working and my grandpa's on a ship because he was a ship captain. But there was a lot of women here. My mom's here. She looks beautiful with her long black hair. She's working hard. My grandma and all the things that were happening. So it was pretty cool. There was one part of the journal where, I said, let's go to the beach. And so, we really don't go to the beach much. And, we grew up in Peru and we were near the beach and everybody was so busy. And everybody was so busy doing their thing that we didn't go as much as I thought we did. But I took my version of me to the beach in this journaling. I said, let's go to the beach. Let's go to the beach. So we went to the beach and I was like, I'm just here to remind you about something that you probably have forgotten. And we can't forget, we have to keep doing, because if we don't do it, we're going to get lost. And, little me, understood and didn't understand at the same time. But I told little me, I said, hey, what I need you to do, and I want to pull this up because I thought it was pretty profound. I said, I'm here to tell you now, have fun, dance, sing, play, run, yell, hug, kiss, kick that soccer ball and juggle it. Enjoy being a toddler. We have plenty of time to grow up. Go hug your mom, your dad, your grandmother, your grandfather, your uncles and aunts, your cousins, second cousins. You're the first grandchild. And I thought that was pretty powerful. It was pretty intense. And, as we continue getting lost in our experience of how we perceived ourselves, I kept writing and kept writing. And then I got to this place where I heard the horn. There's a little horn that they blow. The little vendors, the street vendors would come by. They blow the horn in Peru. And then usually it's the bread guy or the tamale guy. So, but this time it was the tamale guy, And so I would run down the stairs and out the door of the apartment complex or the condo complex. And I would meet the vendor. I would meet the vendors there. And, you know, I'm asking myself, hey, are you allowed to just run out of the house? You know, I'm being that critical parent, you know, and I'm checking out, making sure that, you know, that version of me is able to do that. And he's, oh, it's okay. I'm allowed to do it. You know, they watch me from the balcony. So it was pretty cool. And then, you know, I start to dance. I start to move and I start to wiggle. And so they would play this music and I would dance and everybody would watch me dance. And that's what would bring people to the tamale cart. The tamale cart would get full and they would sell their tamales and I would get tamale. I would get a free tamale for dancing and for doing my thing. And so I actually got to taste of tamale that I haven't tasted for years in this particular, you know, work that I was doing. It was pretty amazing. And the little version of me also was tired. He was ready to go back to bed. He was ready to, you know, just do what little toddlers do. They have so much energy, then they have to just sleep. So I walked back up, and he walked back up, and, you know, my grandmother was there, my mom was there, my mom hugged me, and then, you know, it was funny because I hugged my mom as the toddler, but I hugged my mom as also the adult, and I hugged her so tight and so for so long that my mom even asked, why are you hugging me so hard? What's the matter? What's going on? It's because myself was in that moment hugging my mom, and she felt the presence of me being different. I remember her being so young and so beautiful and so vibrant and so full of, you know, hopes and dreams and stuff. And I got to see her again. And then I was in the room laying there, and then my mom leaves, and then little me asked me to sing a song. And which is funny was this particular song that I just started thinking, okay, what song do I sing to this kid? You know, before I started singing, he goes, you know, I've had a hard time understanding you this whole time. And I go, have you had a hard time to understand me? He goes, I don't know what you're really speaking, but I understand what you're saying, even though I don't understand what you're saying. And I'm thinking, what does that mean? Well, what I found out was back then I didn't speak English. You know, so I spoke Spanish, but I'm having this conversation in writing in English. So my version of me is trying to comprehend, but yet it comprehended and understood. And so I explained to him that you would be speaking English and that you would be getting, you know, you have an education in the United States, blah, 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 went on. And then I told my younger version of myself, okay, this is what I'm going to sing to you. This is what I sang to my kids, because you're going to have kids one day. And so I said, go to sleep, little guy. And so I'm singing this song to my three-year-old toddler, version of myself, okay? And I'm dreaming, and I'm singing this song to him. I'm going, oh, my God, I've known this song from a long time, from this 51-year-old version singing it to myself. And I never really quite understood where that song came from. I know it's a song, but the way I sung the song, the way I changed the lyrics to the song, I never quite understood where that came from. So it's go to sleep, little guy, because that's what I would sing to my son, my oldest son, you know, Dante. I would say, go to sleep, little guy, go to sleep, little guy. And he'd just fall right to sleep. And so my little version of myself was falling asleep, and he goes, will I see you tomorrow? And I said, I'll see you tomorrow or the next day. I have some things to do. And so, you know, it was kind of fascinating. I'm sure I'll run into my three-year-old version of myself at some point, but maybe not right now, maybe a little bit later. But then I started my journaling the next day after next. I started journaling about where the move. We moved into the Beverly Maynard Apartments, which used to be the Greenbrier Apartments near the airport there, and near Whitehall. And now it's no longer there. It's been torn down, but it was nice at one time. And so I remember being 6 years old and being in this complex and, you know, moving from German Village to the east side, and near Bexley area. And I remember the playground. I remember the things that I would do at this young age. And so it turns out that I'm walking with my friends, and then there's this sidewalk, and then there's another, like, it's an apartment complex. So there's a whole bunch of apartments. And then we would stop, and we'd look up, and there was this lady who'd look out the window, this old woman. And we were all afraid. We were all scared. We were all like, ooh, she's going to get you. The old lady's going to get you. We would tease each other. We would be really, you know, at each other and teasing each other about this little old lady who lived in this window, the old lady in the window. And, you know, what was funny was all our young, you know, childhood life, we never knew who this person was. I finally did meet her. You know, I was dared to go up and meet her one day. And it was a pretty amazing story. But the cool thing was, she was our little, the troll at the bridge, for example, you know, like in fairy tales, you know, there was somebody at the bridge that wouldn't let you get across. And you had to pay a toll. So we had to like, almost like sneak across the hedges. And so she wouldn't see us and pretend like she was going to turn us into little frogs and stuff, or, you know, whatever she was going to turn us into. And so it was pretty fascinating. It was pretty neat. It was pretty, pretty crazy. So we created this imaginary person who was a real person, and we created her into like this person who would change us into God knows what. But, you know, she wasn't evil. She wasn't bad. She was just the woman in the window, and we were afraid of her. We were so afraid of her. We were afraid that she was going to do something to us. And, you know, it was just things kids do. I mean, I don't know if you've ever did things like that, but we did. We just never crossed that threshold with her, because that was her domain. Her domain was that threshold. And if she saw us, we'd get frozen or whatever. We'd be like, you know, and we'd run. And, you know, it's funny because we never knew what she thought. So what I did is I started journaling that story about my six-year-old version of myself. And then one moment to next, and I don't know how it happened and when it happened, the old lady popped into my head. I actually was channeling this lady, this woman in the window. All of a sudden, I can look out the window and I could see myself and all the other little kids looking down there. And I was just like, oh my God, what's going on? You know, but then it was, I became her. I guess that's what happened. Well, she started to talk and she started to share and she started saying, you know, I moved to this apartment because I didn't want to bother anybody and I didn't want to go to a nursing home. You know, and my kids really don't care about me. And, you know, I don't want to bother anybody. And she had enough money to be taken care of, and she had assisted living or whatever. But the cool thing was she started talking about who she was. She started talking about that she worked for the Smithsonian, you know, the Smithsonian Institute, that she was an archaeologist for them, and that she would, you know, retrieve artifacts, and she would find all kinds of cool things, and that was her job. She would catalog these things, and she would do all these things. And she talked about how her husband passed away, and that's why she was in this little apartment by herself. She talked about how there was nobody in the front apartment, there was nobody in the apartment next to her, that she was kind of in her own little box in this own little world. And, you know, the amazing thing was, you know, she talked about how she liked to look out the window, and how she liked to look at the playground and watch the kids play, and how she remembered being a young person and how she enjoyed that. And she would always see us little kids, and she would almost play along with us to kind of give us this feel of excitement that she was something else other than she was. So she's sharing this story in through this journaling about why she was doing that. And why she was looking away, but that was what she loved to do. She loved to look out the window. She loved to drink her tea. It made her happy. She was just so excited about doing that. It was something that she just totally, totally jived with. The thing was that she was very, 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 very lonely. And that's one thing that no one knew really about her, that she was really that lonely. She was sharing her emotions and her feelings through my journaling. And then, you know what? She just played with us the same way that we played with her. And she knew that it brought excitement and joy to us. And it raised our blood pressure, and made us feel a certain way. And she was pretty, you know, she was into it too with us. And I thought that was pretty amazing. But there came a point where we got to the point where we dared. And we dared each other, okay? And this is something that I had totally forgotten, that my friends had dared me. And I'm, you know, of course, I'm the guy who would do it because that's just my personality. Well, they dare me to go up there. They dare me to go up there and knock on her door and run. And so the first few times I would go, this is a progression of time. This happened over a course of time. I would be the one that would run upstairs and I would knock on her door and run. And, you know, my friends would all be laughing. You know, did she come to the door? Not, I don't know when I knocked, but, you know. But then one day, I did it again. It was another day. And I knocked on the door. And the door was open. And the door kind of opens up. And I was just, and I got frozen. You know how you, little kids get frozen? Because they didn't expect the door to open. Well, the little old lady was there. The little old lady was there. And this little old lady, you know, I don't remember her name. You know, I don't even know if she even told me her name. But she's like, you know, that's not very nice to knock on the door. I do remember that, her saying, it's not very nice to knock on the door and when people come to it. And I was like, and I didn't know what to say. You know, I'm a kid who spoke a little bit of English, broken English. And she's like, just talking to me. But I do remember, and I don't know the conversation we actually had and what we really talked about. But she invited me in, and I, of course, I went in. Probably not a safe thing to do anymore, but I went in. And, you know, and she gave me some tea. She gave me some cake. And my friends were freaking out. I could hear them outside. I remember them yelling and screaming, wow, what's going on, blah, blah, blah. And she got it, blah, blah, blah. But she gave me tea and cake, and I had tea and cake with her. And I sat there, and we were just talking. Like I said, I don't remember what we talked about. But it was one, I got to meet the little old lady in the window, you know. So the story of the little old lady in the window is a story of everybody. You know, sometimes we misjudge, prejudge, you know, we categorize, we put judgment on people. And, you know, they're not like the way we think they are. And, you know, sometimes we put ourselves in these boxes. We put ourselves into these cubicles and these places because our life is changing constantly. So the little old lady in the window was a story about, you know, conquering fears. It was a story about experiencing something and feeling emotions and feeling. But it changed for me. Once I met her, it wasn't the same for me anymore when I crossed the threshold. I wasn't afraid of her anymore. There was no fear. There was no, I knew who she was, that she was a gentle person, that she cared, and she just liked to see little kids. And she always played along with us and didn't even realize that she was playing along. But the story of is we're all the little old ladies in the window, you know. Sometimes we look out the window and somebody sees us staring or looking. And, you know, they start to wonder what we're thinking, what's going on, what's the prejudgment, what's happening, what's going on in their head. Why are they talking? Why are they looking at my window? You know, we do that. We don't even know we're doing it sometimes. So this little old lady is a version of ourselves, how sometimes we experience when, you know, life through like rose-colored glasses. We experience life through, you know, looking through the window and trying to figure out what's happening. You know, to experience life looking out the window is much different than actually walking out the front door and actually feeling the wind across your face and feeling, you know, the rain hit you on the head, you know, watch the sunset. Much different. So this little old lady taught me a great lesson, you know, a great lesson about, you know, understanding what human nature is about, what people are about, what we think we may think about somebody, and it's not. And I think as I grew older, and I remember from time to time the little lady in the window, that she wasn't really a witch, that she wasn't, you know, guarding the passageway to the troll. But she played too, you know. She taught me that it's okay to play. It's okay to be, you know, a child and to be childlike at that moment. And not to be childish, but to be childlike and to play. And she played along with us, and she did the things with us. And I thought that was fascinating. I thought that was so amazing that this, you know, grown woman wanted to play with, you know, along with us in this particular game. And then, you know, the sad part was maybe a year later after all that experience, she wasn't in the window anymore. She was no longer there. She, I'm assuming, moved away. Maybe she died. I don't know. I don't know what happened to the little lady in the window. I'll never know really what happened to the little lady in the window and what her fate was. But I know for a moment in time, for her and for myself, she got to meet a little person who was myself. I got to meet an older person who was her. And for that moment, we got to share, even if we didn't understand what we were saying to each other, you know, the feelings and emotions of what it means to be human, to be compassionate, to have empathy for another human being, and to just invite somebody into your heart, into your spirit, into your soul, and to share that moment with them and to be with them and not judge them for what they've done or who they are, but just smile at them and look at them and just say, it's a beautiful person in front of me. You know, this little person is just having fun. But she taught me a great lesson to, you know, not to judge people by first appearances, you know, not to judge people because they're looking out a window. You know, she taught me just to be receptive, to be open, to be able to experience, you know, what I was experiencing in that moment. She was amazing. You know, she was one of those people who made me see life in a way that I could never imagined. You know, it's just, you know, it was just magical. It was a magical moment. I don't know if any of you guys have ever had those things where there was an old person or a dog that would look out the window, you know, and you're just kind of, we don't want to go across the sidewalk, across that house because that dog might get you or that old lady might get you or that old man. But I'm sure some of you have probably had something similar to that story. But it was a story that sticks in my head. It's a story about her that just always resonated with me. You know, someday maybe I'll be the old man in the window, looking out the window and looking at the kids and playing the evil troll in the window as they cross the threshold. You know, life is very short. Life is a very compelling thing. Life is something that, you know, sometimes we get so caught up in the moments of, you know, busyness, in the moments of, I can't do this, I can't do that, that we discount ourselves, we discount others, and we don't make time for them. Now, I know one day I might be looking out that window, and I might be the woman who looks out the window. And, you know, one day I might have tea with and cake with a little person who has the daring, you know, and the courage to come and knock on that door to see if I really existed. You know, if that's really, truly somebody there. You know, we're going to come to a place where we're going to have doubts, we're going to have regrets, and we're going to have places. And there's going to also be a time where we're going to say, hey, I'm glad I did that, and I'm glad I, you know, I chose to live my life that way, and I'm glad that I went that direction. You know, I don't know what changes somebody's mind or attitude, or what puts a person in a certain frame of mind to be and to do the things they want to do. Sometimes it's a traumatic situation. Sometimes it's just, we just do it. But I'm here to remind all of us that, you know, if there's something that you truly want to do, if there's something truly that how you want to change your life, and, you know, the biggest thing is fear. My friend told me the other day, you know, a lot of things, the reason you probably don't move into the places that you want to be is because there's some fear about moving into that space. There's some fear about that. There's some comfort about not moving out of that space. But yet, you choose to be miserable, you choose to be frustrated, and you stay. Well, I'm here to say, you know, today is another day for you to make that decision, what's going to be good for you. Now, you may have to do some work in the process. You may have to figure out how you're going to support yourself. You have to figure out if it's going to be a good thing. But I know all of us live with something in our deep core, in our deep soul, and we always wonder, you know, is there more to life? Can I have more? Is this all I'm going to have? And I'm here to say, no, you know, this isn't all you're going to have. This is all you have because this is what you choose to have at this moment. There's more to life. If you want more and you want to grasp, you know, the things that you feel that you deserve, then you will. But you're going to have to make concerted effort. You're going to have to make something change in your life, something that's going to move you in a direction that you haven't moved before. You know, it's amazing how we can get stuck in our mind, how we can stay inside here and it control us, everything inside of here, and how we can just be frozen, completely frozen in time. And are we frozen because it was a trauma? No, we don't have to have a traumatic situation to freeze us. We can just get frozen in our belief systems. We can get frozen in the things that we hear from other people. So what will move us? What will put us into that realm of belief that we're capable, that we're worthy? that we've been so loyal to other people and not loyal to ourselves, what will that be? What would change you? That's your journey. That's your path. That's what you have to figure out. You know, like I said, when I'm doing the open chair Gestalt work, you know, I have a class this Saturday. If you want to come and you want to discover and rediscover pieces and parts of you who are frozen, get a hold of me. There's a class coming up. I can teach you. We go seven generations, seven folds deep. You know, we look into the legacy that you've created for yourself so far. This legacy that we've created for ourselves right now is one of those things that is ours. We all have a destiny, and it's predetermined. But how we experience that destiny is really up to us. Our destiny is death. We will die. Our destiny is that those who were born will live. And those who are ready to move on, they will. But your destiny, you know, a lot of people get triggered when I say, you know, hey, your destiny is predetermined. What's determined is your death. That's it. You're going to die. You don't know when you're going to die. But that is predetermined. We will all die. What's not predetermined is how you experience your life in the process of moving through that. You can experience your life however you want. You can be locked away in the corridors of your mind, in a box looking out the window, or you can go out into the world and experience it all. You know, a lot of people are afraid to experience it all because other people judge them. You know what? I'm here to tell you, fuck those guys, man. Number one, you've heard it. No one pays your bills. No one tells you what to do. If you want to live, then you need to do it. Hey, Don, how are you? Anita, Jacqueline, Tom. You know, I can't tell you how to do it because you'll have to figure that out. But I'm here to tell you one thing. If you don't do it, you're going to get the same results over and over and over. There's a whole world out there waiting for you to experience it. There's a whole group of people waiting for you to meet them. There's a whole world of unlimited, untapped, you know, adventures waiting to happen. But most people won't do it because they have an excuse that they either have money, they don't have time, they have bills, blah, blah, blah. Everything's a blah, 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 okay? You know, our ancestors before us, they've decided that they're going to create the 3D world that locks us into the manifestations that we have. So for a lot of us, it's hard to manifest outside of this realm that has been created for us. It's hard to look outside and say, oh, you know what? You know, this and that. You know, if you truly wanted to change the world, you know, and you've heard this, you change what you want to change inside yourself. But as you change, as you manifest, as you create, as you vibrate, others around you, you will attract other people who will vibrate and manifest and create with you. You'll start to attract like-minded individuals, like-minded energies, all right? And then you grow together. You create community together. And as this community grows together, you do amazing things and you do amazing work. But if you stay in the basement, locked away, and you expect things to change, it's not going to happen. If it does, great, but I truly don't think it's going to happen. If you stay locked away in your house, unless you're doing the work from your computer and you know, creating, I don't know. I have to say, you know, you have to really move outside of your concepts of the mind, these walls that hold us in. These walls, you know, we've created them so they can protect us and so that people can't get to us, so we can't move into it. But as soon as we walk outside, it's a whole different ball game, because there's a whole lot of people just like you with different ideas, different mentalities, different vibrations, different energies, different kinds of things happening, and they all want to make their world better. So you, human beings, what would it take to not have wars? What would it take to not have bills? What would it take to not have the suffering we have on this planet? What would it take? It's not difficult. I'm here to tell you that it's not difficult. We make it difficult. We make it difficult when we want to control, manipulate, get a hold of, strangle, take from somebody else, then we become And then we teach our children to be that. Our children do what we do. You know, our children do all the things we do. We work with our children. Our children learn from us. Now, they also learn too. They also learn their behaviors. They also learn how to parent themselves. They learn to do the things that they have to do for themselves. It's not always easy. You know, sometimes we look at how we parent our children and our children don't come out the way we thought they were going to be. But it's not for us to decide how they're going to be. It's for them to figure it out what they're going to be. Yeah, they hold the same DNA that is inside of us, but that DNA doesn't make them us and doesn't make them good or bad. It's just them who they are. It's, remember, you're talking about 7 generations deep of people who flow through their blood. So you're just one piece of that puzzle. So if you wonder why you are the way you are, you have a lot of lineage behind you. You have a lot of ancestral lineage. You are a memory stick. Like I told you earlier, we are a living memory stick. Like this little memory stick that I pop in my computer. That you are that. You are that. You pass the knowledge. You pass, you know, the stories. You pass the gifts, the songs, the music, all the things that you believe that you are. You know, imagine, you know, our kids, they learn from us. They do what we do. That's why you've heard that saying, the apples don't fall too far from the tree. Granted, that may be true, but apples that fall sometimes rot, and what happens is the seeds are planted and they're sowed into the ground. So, you know, we want the best for our family. We want the best for our children. We want the best for, you know, people around us. But when are you going to have the best for you? We're so asphyxiated that we have to help others and we have to help the world that we forget about us, that we also need to be loved, that we need to be cared for, that we need to be cherished. And it's not to be arrogant and not to be, you know, selfish. But you know what? I also need. I don't want to come from a place of want and need, but I also want to be acknowledged for being on this planet, to being activated, to being awakened, to being on my shadow side, to being on my dark side. You know, for a lot of people, you're only as good as what you did last hour, last day or whatever. Then you got to do it again. You can't live on the things that you did. You got to keep moving, keep working and keep developing and keep, you know, creating. Man is a creator. Man and woman create. Their minds are about creation. We build, we reconstruct, we share, we paint, we sing, we dance. We do all the magical things. This world could be much, much better. And for some people, it's enough. And I get that. That's okay. But for some, it's not enough. It's not good enough. And for some people, no, we could be 10 times better than we are today. You know, I've talked about this in the past. We talk about the Native American mounds, you know, that we find here and there, hodgepodged around our cities. Think about the Native American mound, because we are Native. And please don't take it wrong, but if you're born here, you've become Native to these lands. You become the indigenous people. You become part of her. You are. Our indigenous mounds are our landfills. That will tell us, a million years from now, that will tell the story of who we were and how we lived and what we did and how we used, how we abused, how we just, I don't know what the story is going to look like. I know what the story feels like now because the way we're living in it, but one day someone will unbury those mounds and they're going to say, wow, these people were either very wasteful or, you know, who knows what those stories is. That would be an amazing thing to even think about, an event to ponder and wonder. That one day there will be bones, there will be video games, there will be trash, there will be washing machines plucked out of these things. Because remember, history gets lost. History gets rewritten by those who are the most powerful, That's why we don't know a lot of history about indigenous people who have come before us and truly their story and how they represented that story. So what story will be told? What story will be played out in that moment when we actually are doing, you know, the excavation of those these things called landfills, which are called mounds? You know, when they find cadavers in there, for example, will someone think it was a burial site? No. History will be rewritten. I guarantee you 500 years, 1,000 years, a million years from today, you know, those things may not be there. But time erases memories. Things are forgotten. Things are rewritten. Then we have to use our imagination to recreate what these people were thinking about. It's like the old lady in the window. We didn't know what she was thinking. We just created a scenario of what she was like and what she was thinking about and what she was living and how she was living. And you know what? I was wrong. I was completely, but it wasn't that I was wrong. It was part of the imagination. It was part of the fun. It was part of doing the exercise with her and being, you know, her being my muse of sorts. And I was her muse at the same time. We were musing each other. You know, we didn't even know it. And we vicariously lived through each other in that moment, experiencing what I experienced and she experienced what she experienced. But it's amazing, you know, the history we know today will be one day forgotten. It will be erased. It will be no longer. It's just the way it is. It happens. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, who's to say that dinosaurs weren't an evolved species where they actually lived like we did? But they didn't necessarily have buildings and stuff, but they had a hierarchy. They had a system where they understood things, and it was respected, and it was done a certain way. And then one day a meteor came and wiped it all away. Because what happens when we get our meteor? What happens when our meteor comes? Because we will have a meteor. We will have our turn where a piece of rock hits this earth and crashes and destroys, you know, the civilization that's present. And then another civilization, another race, another species will come from that. It is happening over and over. It has happened. Will we be able to recover from that? I don't know. Does it matter? I don't know. I mean, I know we can only really think about what happens today, but some of us here who are online, some of us who are listening, some of us who have Facebook pages, you know, tomorrow we may not be here. I may not be here. Nothing is guaranteed. Our next breath isn't guaranteed. The only thing that we're guaranteed is we will see our Mother Earth one day. We will see the universe from a different angle, a different point of view. That's guaranteed. Absolutely guaranteed. You know, I'm not trying to be morbid. I'm not trying to be dark. But, you know, appreciate the people around us, and even the ones that piss us off. We don't have to own them. We don't have to acknowledge them and keep them in our lives. But we learn from them, too, as much as we learn from those who love us. Because those who love us, you know, sometimes we actually ignore them more, and we give more energy to the people that we actually have issues with. We give them more attention because we can understand why they won't like us. Why don't they like me? I don't understand. What did I do wrong? You know, instead of thinking, well, you know, this person really digs me and I like them too. Who cares about this other person, you know? Because we're creatures of habit, creatures of need. We have to feel. But it's okay. It's okay to not feel sometimes. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be happy. It's okay to have the gamut of emotions. Our society teaches us that men have to be men and they have to be strong and they don't cry. Well, no wonder we have freaking problems in this world, you know, with men doing things to other people, to men, to little boys and to women, to young girls. Because we don't teach our children that they're allowed to have emotions. So they play out. They act out. They do things, you know, that would necessarily somebody probably wouldn't do. And maybe they have something wrong in their head and they would do it regardless. Who knows? I don't know. But our society cripples also. Our society says that women have to be pretty. Our society said that men have to be strong. Oh, come on. When does that change? When do we say men can cry? Men can cry. If you're a man and you want to cry, cry. If you have emotions you're feeling and you're sad, let it out, man. I'm not going to judge you. I can care less if that's where you need to be. But I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, man, why are you crying? Men don't cry. No, I cry. I cry really good. I let my emotions out. Because you know what? I need to lay them out. I need to show myself personally it's okay to be myself. I don't need to be anybody else. I don't need anybody else's approval to tell me that I have to cry. I don't need anybody's approval to say that I have to be a strong man. I just need to be a good human being. I need to be a good steward of my brother, my sister. Because what I give out, I receive. You know? And then also what they put out to me, they receive. If you ignore me, there's going to be chances that I ignore you because it's going to be hard to talk to you. It's going to be hard to communicate with you. It's going to be hard and very difficult to express what I want to express. It goes both ways. The road goes both ways. You know, there's a time where we meet and we're done. You know, there's a time where men or women, they come to this road where, you know, the relationship is over. And their feelings are done. It doesn't mean they hate that person necessarily. But people are alone to us. Okay, people are alone to us temporarily. That's why it's so important when there is someone very special in your life to appreciate those moments with them. Because they're only alone to us. We don't know if that's the last time we'll see them. We don't know if that's the last time that they'll be in our hearts. We don't know. You know, I strive personally to do the very best I can in every moment I can. And sometimes I fall very short. And that's okay. That's all right. Sometimes I fall short, and the only person who really knows is me. I'm the only one that really knows that I didn't live up to my expectations. You know, people are really good at putting up fronts and looking a certain way and projecting, portraying the way they are. They want the world to see them. Now, you guys have been on my show long enough. You see me cry. You see me cuss. You see me get mad. You see me laugh. You see me put on panda heads. You see me dancing. You see me drumming. For majority of you, you've seen that. And that's me. I enjoy that. I enjoy being myself. I enjoy expressing myself in ways that I like to express myself. I'm not looking necessarily for validation. I'm looking for validation for me to say, you know, I'm free enough to do that. I am safe enough in my skin, you know, to put a panda head on and dance around like a panda, you know? But, you know, it's beautiful. It's beautiful when you're able to be yourself. But you're yourself the most, so you see yourself all the time. So you have the most dialogue with you. You have the most dialogue with, you know, than anybody in the world is you. You know? And for those of you who missed the part of the show about the woman in the window, I told the story in the beginning, towards the beginning. It's almost half through the show. So you might have to go back and play, you know, the thing. But, you know, sometimes we are the old woman in the window. Sometimes we're either looking out or sometimes we're outside looking into the window and wondering what the old woman's experiencing. And also the woman looking out the window wants to experience what they're experiencing. So it's you know, we create these little boxes and little worlds, these little windows and these little places. And sometimes our world's only this big. And that's all we see. And we see these little kids playing. And, you know, and then we imagine going back into time, being a child, being childlike, and playing. But it's an amazing experience to step into somebody else's shoes temporarily. You know, I got to channel her. And when I channeled her, that was pretty amazing to channel this little lady in the window. I didn't know it was going to happen. I was just writing my journaling, and I came to the part about her. And she told me exactly what she did for a living. She told me. And then, you know what? The cool thing about it is that I actually truly met her once, you know, when I was, you know, almost seven. I did meet her. And, you know, it was nothing like I had built and created in my mind about her. It was really powerful. There are many people in our lives who are the old ladies in a window or the old men in the window. There are many people that look at us through these specific places and they think they know us, and they don't. They can only imagine and create what they're seeing about us and what they think we are living and how we're living. So many of us sometimes do that too. We look at somebody else's life and we project onto their life all these projections of what we think and how or what they're doing and what they're living. And it's not always correct. It's not always correct. You know, a lot of us, we can watch TV and then the sound bites that are fed to us, you know, we believe it. Life has sound bites too. You know, if there's an accident on a main intersection, busy intersection, and you ask every person in that intersection who saw the accident, every single person would give you a different story about what they saw and how they experienced it. And that's the same way with life today. You know, we experience it in a way that's very unique to our perceptions, to our imaginations, to our experiences. And we unfold it, we unwrap it, and we put it forward, and we say, hey, this is how I experienced it. This is what I saw. Oh, no, I saw it like that. It was like that. But then another person goes, no, it wasn't like that. It was 10 seconds later. You know, it's how we perceive and how we receive. Perceiving, receiving, and then we put it inside of our filing box of our mind, and then we have to regurgitate it and play it back out. So everything that you experience through life, every moment, every thing that happens, it's your perception of it. It's your perception, how you experience it. Because even the person that you're engaging with and you're having the encounter with, they may not project it the way you thought that it was being projected. Because when it's being projected a certain way, they may have been trying to express something in a certain specific way for you to understand, but you couldn't understand it because you're not in the same rhythm and the same vibration with them. So instead of listening, instead of, you know, having the open ears, you're reacting, responding, you're doing one of those traits, and then you're filing and you're categorizing what's happening in this person's life. What you see and what you hear are two different things. And then you try to put them both together, and through your belief systems and through the things that you've been taught to you in your judgments that you have of other people and other belief systems play out. Does it make it right or wrong? No, not necessarily. It just is what it is. You know, sometimes we have situations where, you know, I have renters, you know, and they haven't paid me rent. In their mind, they don't pay me rent because they feel like they have to take care of their family first. But yet they don't realize that I have a family to take care of too. They don't realize that I have bills to pay too. They don't realize that I have taxes to pay. So sometimes we have to step into other people's shoes, which is very difficult and hard to do because it's not necessarily truly possible. But we have to have compassion and empathy and try to understand what's going on, what's happening. And sometimes it's hard to have compassion, empathy for other people when we don't have that for ourselves. When we can't be empathetic and compassionate towards our belief systems and to what we believe about ourselves. A lot of us walk around really wounded because we don't feel like we're worthy enough, that we're good enough to do certain things. But those are journeys that we have to battle. Those are things that we have to figure out as we grow and as we mature and as we move into space. But the best thing is to do the best you can for yourself, the best for others, and it all will work itself out. You know, a lot of us struggle. We struggle. And it's not that we struggle because things aren't going our way. We're struggling because we're not changing certain things in our lives that would help us navigate to the right direction. And it's hard. It's hard when you've been told that you're no good. It's hard when someone told you that you're not worthy enough. It's hard when somebody says, hey, you know what, you're this way, and the list goes on. I can stay here all night and talk about it, but that's not what I want to try to say. The thing is to understand that people don't necessarily see the world the way you see it. I mean, newsflash. You know, we think we do. We want people to look at the world the way we do, but people don't necessarily do. But you can look at your world the way you would like to see it, how you want to perceive it, how you want to receive it. And you know what? That's enough. We can't change people. We can only show them tidbits of ourselves, tidbits of how we perceive the world. They have to make the final decision what's best for them in the end, regardless. You know, you could be a miracle worker and heal people, but if someone is not ready to heal and someone's not ready to receive the energy and someone's not ready to receive the gift, they won't heal. They won't receive it. Doesn't matter how magical you are. There are great sages that have come before us who have great messages and great gifts, and the world's still in the same state of mind. The world is not necessarily better or good or hasn't really improved. There are people who change their beliefs, and there are people who change just enough. There are people who move into the right direction to do the right things for themselves. And that's why it's important to honor you as a person. If you honor yourself, then it's easier to honor others. But don't expect somebody to necessarily honor you back, because they're not honoring themselves. So it's going to be hard for them to honor themselves if they don't know how to. But you can. You can be the example. You can be the person that says, I live my life to the best and to the fullest that I can. Don't expect somebody else to necessarily have that. We would like people to be that way. We would like people to be a certain way and to respect and be, you know, kind to one another. But it doesn't happen. What can happen is we can control what we can control. And what we control is our feelings, our emotions, and our feelings and how we project and how we live in the moment. So that's my story about the little old woman in the window. You know, I hope you guys enjoy my podcast. And I hope you enjoy these times when I come out here and share with you. It's a place and it's time, and it feels great to be able to share with everyone what's happening and what's going on in my life. But, you know, just do your best. Keep going out there. Do your best. You know, honor, respect, love one another. And, you know, just know that life is always like an ebb and flow, up and down. Things are always going to be moving through and up and going around. But I highly recommend for those of you who just tuned in to, you know, listen to the show from the beginning, because there's some really good stuff here. And I think you would really enjoy it. But for those of you who would like to participate in the Sevenfold Legacy Open Chair Gestalt at Divine's Place in Worthington, Ohio, send me a message here. Send me a message, okay, because I'm going to be there on Saturday from 11:30 to 2 o'clock. We're going to have a class teaching how to work through the process. It's going to be a very powerful class. And I think it would be worth your time. And if you can't, there'll be other classes. Visit me at iggygarcia.com. You can see my schedule on there, when we're going to have drum circles and what's going to be happening. All right, guys. I want to thank you for tuning in. I want to thank you for being here with me today. It's always a pleasure. Love you guys dearly. Be well. Have a great, great, great weekend. And I will see you guys next time on the air here with Insights Radio on the Block Talk Radio Network. On Facebook Live. Be well. Talk to you soon.